I'm going to introduce Reverend Francisco Cañas, who is the National Coordinator for the National Plan for Hispanic and Latino Ministries. He works with the General Board of Global Ministries and certainly has been helpful in Minnesota with our Hispanic congregations and ministries. And he will introduce the panel, and they will provide some food for thought for all of us, no matter where we live, because in all of our communities, there are many people who need the people of the United Methodist Church. Francisco?
Thank you, Bishop Sully. Good morning. Amazing. We continue with the banquet. We continue celebrating and serving all God people. It is my honor and my pleasure to introduce to you this beautiful and amazing group of people that is working for our denomination. First, I want to introduce the executive director of the Asian American Plan, who is Dr. Nanjing Zhang. You need to understand that my pronunciation with his name is a little bit weird. So he will be later correcting me about the way I'm pronouncing his name, because I have been practicing for the last 3 weeks without getting the sound of the N in my tongue. So I'm sorry about it, indeed. The second person is the Reverend Paul Chun. He is the executive director of the National Korean Plan. His office is located at Global Ministry. His office, in reality, is next to my office, and we are always sharing the delicious and amazing Korean food that is always a delightful thing to do. Next is Mona Lisa, who is the director of the Pacific Islander Plan. And next to her is the Reverend Anita Phillips, who is the director of the Native American Initiative. And finally, it's Fred Allen, who is working for the 21st, strengthening the Black Church for the 21st century. Allow me to make a short statement about the National Plan for Hispanic Latino Ministry, and following me will be the rest of the group. Holistic. People-centered. Connectional. Resourceful and prophetic. That is the core values of the National Plan for Hispanic Latino Ministry. Our vision is to be the church for all people, with a great opportunity to hear the great news of his kingdom in our own language. That is your plan for Hispanic Latino ministry.
Good morning. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach the good news to the poor, to give sight to those who cannot see, to free those who are enchained mentally and spiritually and otherwise. It is indeed one of the most honored privileges to be a part of a movement, not just an initiative. Strengthening the Black Church for the 21st century has been one of the most dynamic and one of the most profound phenomena in the United Methodist Church. We are proud of the work that we have been involved in and called to the ministry to strengthen and to revitalize and to transform African American or Black churches across this denomination and beyond. the particular goals that we're trying to strive for in continuing this call to ministry and mission for the next quadrennium and beyond. First and foremost, we want to develop an academy of interns. That is, that we are going to solicit and recruit young men and women, vet them in the best way who have shown potential and the highest potential for leadership. They will matriculate for 2 years under the leadership of our most proficient pastors across this denomination. And after matriculating and going through that process in partnership with Perkins School of Theology, Gammon Theological Seminary, and Garrett Theological Seminary. And then we're going to address the issue of the poor by trying to enable and to help transitional men and women coming out of incarcerated environments to find a welcome, a radical welcome, through our churches. SBC 21 is a phenomenon that we know and hope that you will continue to embrace. And one final word, it has been an honor and a cherished opportunity to work with my sisters and brothers from the other ethnic constituencies in terms of collaboration and in partnership. God bless you. Embrace our plan and enable us to go forward. Thank you.
Good morning. And 안녕하세요. Yes, I think you're not very good at that. Why don't we practice it? 안녕하세요. Very good. Very good. Let me first share with you the vision statement of Korean National Plan. It is to integrate Wesleyan tradition and Korean spirituality to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. As you can see, our vision statement is very much in line with the vision statement, mission statement of the United Methodist Church. With this vision, we try to put into practice the following core values in our work: passionate spirituality, radical hospitality, small group ministry, and sacrificial stewardship, which we believe also are signs of a vital congregation that we all want to promote in our church very much. In addition to the four key areas of ministry that we have been working on in the last three quadrenniums, namely congregational development, next generation ministry, developing ministry resources, and leadership formation, Korean National Plan plans to add two more important ministries in the next quadrennium. First, advocacy work on justice ministries such as immigration and immigration reform, and the ordination of Korean American and other racial ethnic people. Second, to reflect the global nature of our church, we want to expand the horizon of our work outside of the U.S. We want to work with the central conferences and also other autonomous Methodist denominations to strengthen the ongoing missionary work of Korean churches throughout the world. So, if approved, the name of our plan will be Korean Ministry Plan instead of Korean National Plan, to embrace the global nature of our church. Thank you.
Good morning. I cannot say good morning in 15 different languages in my constituency of 10 sub-ethnic Asian American groups. Asian Americans are invisible, invisible, even if there are 14.7 million, according to 2010 census, and even if they are the fastest growing group in the United States for 5 times of average population growth in the United States. Who are they? They are immigrants and refugees from Cambodia. Remember, killing fields, from Formosa, Taiwan, India, Pakistan, Japan, Laos, Philippines, Vietnam. Remember the Vietnam War. And you have Hmong people, Burmese, Myanmar people, Nepalian, and Mongolian people coming to us, to the United Methodist Church, to have a church with us. These many people, more than 65%, are unchurched. They are already here in your community, in your business, in your work, school, stores, everywhere, even if they are invisible. AALM, standing for Asian American Language Ministry, is our church's ministry. Our church's mission and evangelism asset for Asian Americans and to Asian Americans and with Asian Americans. I'm so proud to report that our church, the United Methodist Church, has done a good job starting new congregations of Asian Americans from none, zip, to hundreds through AALM, with collaboration with districts, annual conferences, and Asian American National Caucus and Subethnic Caucus groups. Thanks to AALM, the initiative of General Conference of the Church, Asian American United Methodist can know the connectionalism of the whole church and can participate in it and contribute to the whole church's mission, making disciples. One of the examples is, and unique feature of our plan is language resource development. We helped Vietnamese caucus to produce hymnal. It can be used not only in this country, but also in Vietnam, in 150 new churches planted by GBGM. Thank you for your support.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. I feel like we are certainly relatives after sharing some very significant moments with you. This morning I come to you as the director of the Native American Comprehensive Plan, and we are the plan that is responsible to reach out, to offer Christ, to do the cultural adaptation so that the context can be offered to our Native people in a context that is appropriate for them. I want to lift up to you something that's happened in, I know, at least a couple of conferences that have taken kind of a out-of-the-box directive in working with Native people, and I'm proud that we have been able to be a small part of that. And that is conferences that have had properties that are located close to Native reservations, Native communities, rural and urban Native communities, where they have a church that is on the verge of closing or ready to close. And I know two for sure, our Oklahoma Conference and the Minnesota Conference, that have taken the bold step of saying, we aren't able to do ministry in this place, but we want to offer it to you so that you might do ministry in this place. And there is a church in Glenpool, Oklahoma, where the Oklahoma Annual Conference turned that property over to the Oklahoma Indian Missionary Conference to start a new church. And the Minnesota Conference, that property was turned over to a group of Native people from the communities of the reservations in northern Minnesota. And there are so many ministries coming out of that place. There, even in this situation, even the tribes in that area have engaged in covenant with that church group and are coming in and doing repairs. They're providing resources because the United Methodist Church reached out and offered a hand. As the Native American Comprehensive Plan, these are the kinds of opportunities that we hope we can walk with you in making possible. There are over 300 different Native tribes across this country, and then we have many tribes related internationally, tribes on the borders, tribes that have immigration issues related to the northern border with Mohawk. We have on the southern border Tohono O'odham people who have been such a broad net is always cast out there to try and deal harshly with immigration. And it catches so many people in that net, and it catches our people. And I'm talking too long, and I'm getting off on. I'm starting to get preachy, so I apologize. I apologize, and thank you all very much for opening your hearts and minds to us.
My name is Mona Lisa Tuitahi, and I noticed that my colleague here would not even try to attempt to say my last name. We'll have to give him a lesson after this. I am Pacific Islander, and given the short amount of time, I thought I might just do the hula. But I think I'll leave that to Tom Choi, who is fresh out of the island. But I will, in a few sentences, attempt to tell you a little bit about Pacific Islanders. You will indulge me, if you will, because I know many of you don't know many Pacific Islanders or don't see many Pacific Islanders around our connection. But I will submit to you that we are here indeed. And I am not a theologian. I am not even a minister. And I would not even know where to begin to tell you who we are as a faith community. But before I go on, I would like to just bring your attention, because this is the way of Pacific Islanders. It has taken us many long years to get to this point. And even as we arrive, we have still a few more mistakes just to keep us grounded so that we are not, lest we think we have no more, lest we think we've arrived, we've got a mistake there on our brochure here. That first sentence should be the title of the plan that we have submitted to the General Conference. The Comprehensive Plan for Pacific Island Methodism should be the title of that short section there. And with that, I'd like to say just in a few sentences who we are. As I said earlier, I'm not sure that I can accurately tell you what a Pacific Island faith community is. I would not even begin to be able to tell you where we are on any metrics of measurement within the United Methodist system of performance and measurement. But I do know a few things. I am first-generation Pacific Islander living in America, and I do know that I have chosen to live within the faith community of Pacific Islanders, to practice my faith, sharing our story, sharing my story, and living out a theology of reciprocity and mutuality. That is how Pacific Islanders live. They live within communities. They live within relationship, relationship with others, and relationship with God. And it is that I come to you this morning and asking you to enter into relationship with us. We would do very well if we were back in the islands, because a Pacific Islander will give the last dollar they have before they see a church die or see a church go down. I know that for a fact. But we are not in the island, and we need you just as we need other Pacific Islanders. And so this morning, I come to you humbly asking, would you enter into partnership with us? Would you be our family? Would you be a part of our community? And with that, I say thank you.
As you see, I got the hard role of introducing people. But at this point, I have the great privilege to introduce to you the Reverend Jorge Dominguez. Reverend Jorge Dominguez is the General Deputy of Global Ministry, and he's a great partner in ministry with the National Plans. He has been a great support, not necessarily just for the Hispanic Latino plan, but for the rest of the initiative. It is great honoring, with a profound gratitude in my heart, that I introduce this handsome man, and he's going to make a few statements in regard to this initiative.
Good morning. Francisco does have a problem with names. My name is Jorge Dominguez, not Jorge Dominguez. I am a native from Brazil, and it is very difficult for him to differentiate the pronunciation between the Portuguese and the Spanish.
Just that I'm practicing the language.
But it's a pleasure to work with him, and it's a pleasure to work with all the plans. Some people asked me when we are traveling and talking about the plans, where are the plans located in the structure of the church? The ethnic plans are, because there was a very wise decision of General Conference, not separate agencies of the church. For stewardship, for accountability, they were placed within the agency's structure to be not only monitored and being held accountable, but also to be supported by the work of these agencies. So the General Board of Global Ministries, General Board of Discipleship, General Council on Finance and Administration, and even the other agencies where the plans are not physically located, have a very close relationship with the plans, so that the work done with the racial ethnic minorities in the United States be coordinated as well, maximized, because that's a way to make the work be much more effective. In this 20 years that the United Methodist Church has initiated this work and supported these initiatives, focusing the work and challenging the agencies to be more responsive and accountable to the growth of the racial ethnic minorities in the country, it has been seen that the presence and the diversity of the church has grown and has actually become much more relevant for our ministries in this country. But the relationship is not only a relationship that the plans are monitored and supervised. They are fully integrated and coordinated with the agencies, but they also hold the agencies accountable. They are always challenging the agencies to be responsive to how we respond to the challenges of ministering to these communities in the United States. But as I said, these are the work that we have been doing in the United States, and the United Methodist Church has become increasingly aware of its global identity. It is a church present in many parts of the world. And sometimes people say, well, but these plans are just a U.S. concern. And it isn't anymore. I had the privilege to preach in the only United Methodist Church in the city of Geneva in Switzerland for a couple of times already. They have three services in that congregation. The first service is the French-speaking service that actually is the community that created that local church there, and they have an average attendance of about 20 to 25 people every Sunday. But I was also asked to preach on the next service in Spanish, where the Spanish-speaking congregation gather together, and they have an average attendance of 75 people. That same Sunday, I was asked then to preach on the Portuguese-speaking service that happens in the evening for the mostly Brazilian, but also Portuguese communities in Geneva, and they have an average attendance of 150 persons per Sunday. There are today 8 Hispanic churches in the country of Switzerland. And this is a growing ministry. If we go to Germany, and the German Central Conference will have a meeting with helping to train pastors working with migrant congregations in Germany and the Northern Europe. This is the third time they are having this meeting at the end of this month, and they actually cannot hold all the pastors and congregations that would like to attend. They have about 60 people attending this training for the pastors, and this is where all the agencies are being invited to support and help to train this new ministry with racial ethnic minorities in other countries. Not to speak of the Korean communities in Russia that are growing, that are part of that community and demands and needs the support that the Korean communities here in the U.S. are providing at this moment. And I could go on with many other examples to show that the racial ethnic initiatives is no longer a U.S. concern. It is a United Methodist concern wherever we are. And this is why the ethnic initiatives proposal to the General Conference is a visionary proposal for the future of the United Methodist Church. It's not just to talk about the growth of these communities that are growing everywhere, not just along the border with Mexico, but anywhere in the country, as well anywhere in our connection. And the General Conference will be very wise to continue the support for these initiatives. And we help and hope that all of you will also give this message to your delegations. Thank you.
We thought that it would be appropriate to take some minute for address some of the questions that probably you have related to the initiative. So it is a time for questions and answers. The panel is ready to respond to concerns or ideas or whatever you want to ask or address about our plans. Yes.
I'm Wei Chang from New England Conference and Clergy Delegate, and I'm also I belong to two national plans, Korean American National Plan, and also I'm Asian too. I have a question. This is not easy for me as a ethnic minority too, and I'm very proud of the national plans. I can only speak for the Korean National Plan, what they have achieved for the last 8 years or so. So I'm asking this question with, frankly speaking, some unease feeling. I'm working with a mentee who is a Hispanic clergy woman, serving a predominantly Hispanic congregations. And we've been working together in the area of patriarchism and how to maintain a responsible balance between cultural and sensitivity and history, but also remaining authentic to the gospel truth. So about equality. I also know that Korean women clergy are not serving, only very few number of Korean clergy women are serving in Korean ethnic congregations. And I want to know what the national plans are doing to, how do I say it, responsibly challenge ethnic congregations in the area of patriotism with sensitivity. I don't want to sound imperialistic, but I'm sure they are working on that, so I think this is a good time for the delegates to hear, and if there anywhere any way that we can help national plans to achieve that goal.
Let me respond to that. Thank you for the question, Reverend Chang. First, I recognize and acknowledge that that's one of the areas that we really need to improve. As a national Korean United Methodist community, we feel that is one of our original sins. And for this reason, the Korean National Plan actually formed a partnership with the National Association of Korean Women Clergy. In that, we formed a common task force to make our church more gender sensitive, especially in the area of women clergy being appointed to Korean congregations. The current statistics shows that about 10% of our Korean women clergy are serving Korean churches, and about 70 of them are associate pastors, and 30% of them are serving as senior or only pastors. As you can see in these statistics, we have lots of room to improve. And we are working with also those bishops that are serving on our plan on this area, and we will continue to work on this. And also for the makeup of our Korean National Plan, we really try to emphasize the inclusion of women clergy and women lay people so that we can be really inclusive. So we'll continue to work on this area, and please give us support and also pray for us. Thank you.
A perspective from the Latin American community. Let me just give you a couple comments. It's about 27 nations representing the Latin American community in this country. That doesn't include the Caribbeans, and doesn't include people from Europe. It's more than 35 different cultural settings that we are facing a daily basis by doing ministry. It is no doubt about it that the formative and educational process that the plans have taken in regard to our leadership at the local and local congregation level as well conference level is a significant task. It is almost impossible to be accomplished. But it is no doubt in my heart that if the National Plan for Hispanic Latino Ministry continue pressing on in the values of our denomination, we're going to transform not just the Hispanic Latino community, but it's going to transform the entire nation. We are going to transform the globe, and we are going to build his kingdom. So it is an effort. It is an effort that belongs to each of us, regardless of our ethnicity. Because at the moment we sit at the benches or we go beyond the pulpit, we are educating each other. So let us continue praying and working hard in these matters that are difficult to address, but not impossible.
I thank you for the question, because I think your question highlights the reason why we need the plans. I think in this instance it's one issue, but it could be many, many more issues. And I think one of the roles that the plans play is that they stand within the gap. They are a bridge and can be the united body that makes that prophetic approach and journey within this new setting, if you will. So I think it does highlight why, in fact, the plans, otherwise you'll have differing views and differing approaches in a variety of places. But I think with the plans, we can have a united approach to these variety of problems that come up at various instances and very often. So thank you.
The last question, our time is getting close to... Yes, back there, please.
Hi, I'm Jan Davis, and I'm from the North Texas Conference. And my question is this. I'm a senior pastor. I serve a local congregation. It's 130 years old. But yet we feel like God has called us in the last 3 years to start 4 new faith communities. One is a basically Anglo community in a suburb. The other is a community of African refugees that speak Swahili. The other is a community of Hispanic immigrants into North Texas. And the fourth we're praying about is a Korean American with nationals that are coming in. We feel like we are an old congregation, but God is asking us to give new birth in this new generation. My two largest struggles are this. Number one is finding good leaders, pastoral leaders, that can break the language barrier. And the other is funding. So my question, because I am so excited about what you're saying, that the request for the World Service Fund, my question is, how do we get those funds back into the local church for those of us that are on the ground really trying to birth these new communities of faith? How can you help the local church pastors?
An excellent question. I think the approach that SBC 21 has deliberated around and concluded that in order to fill the gap with regards to starting new churches is to, first of all, to recruit potential high-quality young leaders, both on the clergy and lay side. We believe that this may serve as a model that we could probably all adopt and to adapt using the kind of three-step approach that we're using, first to vet, in collaboration with the boards of ordained ministries, with the cabinets, and with the various people who might be involved in the churches who would accept and receive the interns, those persons who are on the track of being ordained. I think that we're all concerned about how do we collaborate in such a way that we cross racial cultural lines and to identify ways by which new church starts would not be just one cookie-cutter way. I think the community faith approach in many ways would help to address the issue of finance. It's extremely expensive to start new churches, as we all know. So I think that we've got to work in collaboration with the national plans, with the annual conferences, as well as with other resources that may be made available in the denomination to help provide that kind of assistance. But it's a very complex issue, but one that I think we can really rise to the challenge of that, and we can show examples in various communities. North Texas might be a model example, our model conference, if we begin to collaborate and work together in terms of identifying in a very strategic way a comprehensive plan with very specific goals and objectives and how-tos, with a budget allocated for those kind of realistic goals, and not to be so grandiose or too overexcited about the numbers, but starting with one and having that to serve as an example. And I think we need to look at some of the statistics that we already have in hand in terms of church growth that's already occurring. And MJ has mentioned in his report the number of churches that they've started. And so we need to look at those models, I think.
In terms of the channeling of funds from this plan to the local churches, from the perspective of Asian American Language Ministry and Pacific Islander National Plan, all the monies that are being requested for here will be directly channeled to the project and programs, expenses, costs at the local level, and the staffing will be being provided by GBGM at this time.
More at a practical level, my answer is please contact us directly or through your annual conference, and we'll try to help those congregations in terms of funding too.
North Texas Conference is one of the 37 conferences that is working in partnership with the National Plan for Hispanic Latina Ministry. Your conference have a committee, a conference committee for Hispanic Latina Ministry. I have been working with your bishop and cabinet. Please call me. Call me immediately. We will help you. We need to yes. Final question. Just 1,000 sure answer him.
I just wonder, Jen Ilo from Baltimore Washington Conference, lay delegate, I would be interested to hear from the panelists whether the monies designated take into account the possible restructuring and how you think the restructuring will affect your work.
That is the question that everyone has been waiting for. And each of these persons are ready to respond. I'm not going to take the risk. Fred, come and help us.
I noticed that Francisco knows how to pronounce Fred. We really appreciate that question. It's one that we've been grappling and struggling with over the course of time when we first recognized that the proposals coming from the CT, the IOT, had been surfaced and publicized. We had a real concern as a collective body of directors representing our respective boards. As a result of that, we, in fact, approached the connectional table, IOT, and simply expressed our sincere concern about not being as intentionally involved in the process of feeding into and getting responses back. So we have together as a collected group or a consolidated group or a group in solidarity would like to maintain a sense of autonomy, first of all, and not to allow the proposal or the recommendations to dictate or to define what our future might be. So we have decided that we have been very satisfied working with the affiliated agencies, our program agencies, in the case of GBOD, where SBC 21 is housed, as well as the Native American Initiative, and the other program initiatives housed with GBOD. GBGM. We hope that the sensitivity of the General Conference will take into consideration that we ought to have a direct say-so with persuasion and with support of the body to allow us to make some decisions about where we might be placed and how the allocations of those funds might be lined up in the functional areas, not based upon the new structure per se, but based upon the experiences and the success of the various and respective programs that we've been able to implement and carry out. We believe not only the directors, but our boards, our coordinating committee members, we believe that we have the best insight in terms of where we ought to be placed and how those funds ought to be allocated. So we have been in conversation both with IoT and also with the Connectional Table, with our general secretaries, and with others who have also proposed alternative plans for how the ethnic plans are going to be housed, how they're going to be funded, and how the implementation of those programs are going to be initiated. I hope that responds to the question. It's a difficult one, as we all experience some of the ambivalence that we are all confronted with in terms of trying to dissect and to clearly have an understanding and a definition and an appropriate way by which all of the funds and all of the new structure proposals will have a sense of reciprocity, justice, and fairness is the bottom line.
I'm going to invite you to, for a couple minutes, to pray with me. My sincere apology for the accent, but believe me, I love you deeply. And I had to say this to you. Mary Brooke Casal is here, and she has been an amazing person working with the plans, the national plans. There is no doubt in my heart that the Connectional Table, as well as the IoT, are working so hard in being the church that we are trying to be, and a church that will reflect all colors, all genders, all sexual orientations, because we are building His kingdom, not our kingdom. And I know that that's the kind of people we are. So it is a lot of confidence in my heart that your support, that support of the United Methodist Church, is for the plans. So God help us. Let us pray. Holy Person. Precious, sweet, tender Spirit. Come quickly and be with us. Help us to be the people of your kingdom. Help us to do your will. And allow us to see the new city, the new kingdom, the new Jerusalem, the new USA, the new United Methodist Church. Because you are faithful, you are powerful, and you are in each of us. Oh, Holy Presence, bless our General Conference. Bless our people. We pray in your holy name, precious name. Amen.